Welcome to the Omul Variety Hour, Judith Arcana.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's delightful to have you on the program today to talk about The Janes, a new documentary on the underground abortion network in Chicago that you are a part of. The film was released on HBO this month and is disturbingly timely, with the Supreme Court expected to overturn Roe v. Wade this month. So let's start by talking about The Janes. You were a Jane, how that name was chosen, and what the network was about. And then we can talk about some of the lessons in that work for the rough road ahead.
Okay. The group changed over time, of course. It evolved. It began with a college student who, to help a friend, got the phone number of a Chicago doctor who was willing to perform abortions. And then after that first time, naturally, because humans are humans, other people heard that she had the info. And so she got a lot more calls. And what she wound up doing was having a meeting with some other women who were part of the then beginning Chicago Women's Liberation Union in the late 60s. And she said, "Is anybody wanting to do abortion work?" And what happened was they started out doing what she, that original woman, had done, giving out phone numbers of docs they had vetted. And then the evolution began. Initially, there were some performers of abortion surgery who were found to be inadequate, either on a personal level or medically, but a good number were competent. So that was fine for a while. Then what happened was the women wanted to do more and began to talk with the people who called, began to set up appointments, which we called quote unquote counseling, and was very useful. People would call, they would leave their phone numbers and their names on the giant answering machine. You remember when they were the size of refrigerators? And we would call them back and say, "Hello, this is Jane." And the reason that name was chosen, according to Janes who were there at the start, is that it was such a simple name, such an obvious name, such a classic in English, old-fashioned name, and it wasn't particularly common among women and girls at that time. So they would call, they would leave their information, a woman would call back, she would say, "Hello, this is Jane, you called," and then their conversation would involve medical information, how far pregnant they were, etc. And the Janes themselves, the members, soon began, as I say, to become interested in more than just funneling that telephonic information. And the upshot of it was that moving through referrals to counseling, and then to maybe even assisting by driving people to the address and so on and so on, the group ultimately learned how to do abortions, which in those days were almost exclusively DNCs for the first three and a half or so months of a pregnancy, and then induced miscarriages for the time after that when a DNC could not be done, and became essentially a freestanding, literally free in the sense of untethered to the medical industry, and as you've noted already, underground. Now, it's true that with all underground stuff, there are whispers. That's how the underground of anything works, like prohibition in those years. You know, people would say, "This is how you do it. This is the number to use." And everyone.
And broad networks of support are involved, including the officials of various kinds.
Who yes.
Can be supportive or persecutory, depending.
Depending on what they think is in their personal interest. So that, for instance, we know for sure there were police women who came to the service. There were the mothers, sisters, wives, mistresses of police officers. There were people connected to all of the different ranks and realms of society who came to the service. It was, you could say, an open secret at the same time that it was literally underground.
I thought it was very effective. The film was very effective in situating this work in Chicago politics. You got kind of a feel
yes.
for different things going on, including the left, other political dynamics, anti-war movement, the mob. And so I think in that sense, there was this interesting intersection of abortion politics and women feminists taking this work up as partly a critique of both the medical profession, which was very male and patriarchal, and also to some extent, areas of the left. Can you say a bit about how the documentary takes up some of this broader political context of the work?
Yes, I think that's one of the, I agree with you. I think that's one of the fine things that the filmmakers have done by placing us exactly in the geography and the chronology of our time and place. And so, I mean, people were in the streets in those years, in the late 1960s and early 70s, for the civil rights movement, for the anti-war movement, and many other important concerns. And one of the important concerns, of course, turned out to be of very little interest to men in general, but was of serious interest to female people, people with uteruses. And the service, while it is by no means the case that the majority of us were political activists, there were some, but the service was so woman-oriented, so necessary to the people then always called women, that it could, as they say, fly under the radar of even people in the movement. And I think that the film does a fine job of doing both things, the one that you began this part of our conversation with, saying they placed us so clearly in our time and geography, and at the same time show very clearly how this was of no interest, really, to the guys who ran the movement. And that was, of course, in some ways, very useful to us.
Yeah, during the latter part of the Janes, around, 1973 and 74, I joined the Feminist Women's Health Center in LA, and we provided abortion services administered by doctors. But there was also a struggle over and an insistence to keep some control over abortion surgical technology and techniques, because the fear then, and this was in 74, was that even with Roe v. Wade, that women would lose this access. And of course, that was some time back, but has proved all too sadly prescient. So that was a big part of the work and the film, was to emphasize not only the politics of access to abortion, but it matters who has control over this medical technology, particularly surgical abortions. How do you see the film taking that up, that question of the control over the medical techniques and technology of surgical abortions?
I think one of the really valuable things that the filmmakers did was to not only, of course, interview all of us who are Janes, and of course, we're old people now, and it's extremely, I mean, it's really, I gotta just say, it's super cool that they have these photographs of us in our early years, and then there we are, these talking heads of old women, and you don't see that every day.
No, there's some wise old women.
Yes, well, even if you leave off the adjective, although I definitely go with you there, Jan, even if you don't say that, the notion of having the experts, the people with experience, be old women is not a common notion in this time. Anyway, but what you were speaking of, yes, the court did vote to, you know, accept Roe v. Wade. They passed that. That became the law. But it was only 3 years, just 3 years until the Hyde Amendment. So really, our history is far more complicated than people realize. It isn't just in the last 10 minutes or even just the last 10 years that an assault on the supposed liberation of Roe v. Wade has been happening.
And I think we've also moved from just a narrow pro-choice, somewhat apologetic stance toward abortion access to more of an open and broader politics of abortion within the context of the reproductive justice movement, and understanding, I think, a lot of young activists that this is part of a broader politics of the right, and that we need to approach this in the same intersectional way that the right wing does, in a sense. The right wing does connect access to guns, cutting back on environmental protections, and denying healthcare services for people, and yet has this all wrapped around the protection of the fetus in this bizarre way. But all of these things are kind of aligned in the minds of these right-wing Supreme Court justices and in many minds of many conservatives. And I think there is that also in the abortion rights movement too, a broader call beyond just access to, you know, access to trans care, to addressing issues of sexuality, fighting for the rights to raise a child, have childcare, addressing racism in the healthcare system. And you also have talked about during that period, the forced abortion or and forced sterilization of women, particularly Puerto Rican women, I think you had talked about, and other women of color. So those issues, I think, are more, perhaps more central to the abortion struggle now.
Yes, I think that is understood more readily and more clearly now than it was long ago. And I also think that it is, what you've just described is part of the analysis. And I don't think that was the case for very many of us, and not just Janes, but people who were thoughtful and political in the late 60s and early 70s. We were beginners, we were just learning. And when the abortion rights, that was a phrase that was common in those years, movement suddenly became the pro-choice movement, I personally was really disgusted. And it was about not using the word abortion. That kind of reluctance is of no value. And I think that it is no longer possible for intelligent, well-meaning people to make mistakes like that. I hope I'm right that it's no longer possible. I hope I won't be proven wrong, that people are still being too nice. But that was really a serious couple of steps backward, choosing the word choice instead of using the word abortion. However, I'm cheered by the fact that now, in this moment when you and I are talking, people are saying the word abortion constantly.
Yeah.
And so, that's actually
to the extent that discourse matters. Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of ironic, but reality. Yeah.
Overcoming that inhibition around the word itself. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, well, yeah. I want to congratulate you for your part in this film. I know that there was a whole creative team of directors and producers, but it was such a joy to see you in this project and have that history and the legacy of the Janes, not just honored, but a kind of guiding North Star for where we're at now. You know?
Well, it's very good of you to say. I don't know if we think of ourselves in that North Star way, but we definitely have attitude.
Yeah, that's right.
And we were free to make that clear in this film.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Yes. And it's along the lines of, yeah, old women should wear purple and speak truth to power. What can they do to you now, right?
Yeah.
And it's now on HBO. And do you know if it's expected to be available anywhere else?
I think it won't be available anywhere else for at least a month or so. But I think, too, that HBO is considering very seriously stuff like schools or socio-political cultural organizations, perhaps showing the film, or theaters showing the film for some social purpose. That kind of thing is, I believe, under discussion right now. But it'll be on HBO for many, many months.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks so much for joining me today, Judith Arcana. I look forward to having more conversations as we navigate the road ahead.
Yes. Okay. Well, thanks for inviting me, Jan, and for doing this work.
Okay. Take care.
Okay.